gentlemen, and welcome to another edition of American Exposé. I'm Darren Weeks, your host for the next hour. Good to have you with us on this 9th of May, 2005, as tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be covering the Central American Free Trade Agreement, often called NAFTA. And it's a nasty, nasty thing that they want to get through, just like the North American Free Trade Agreement has done so much for this country. Now our traitorous leaders want to expand it to the Central American countries, and tonight we're going to be covering that. And folks, this is nothing new. This is more of the implementation process of the world government that they're trying to establish. And Agenda 21 is the United Nations blueprint for sustainable development, and that includes the redistribution of wealth from the developed countries into the developing impoverished countries. And this plan is going forward, and CAFTA will be an implementation of this plan for sustainable development. And first of all, before we start, ladies and gentlemen, I want to acknowledge that Dennis has put on the website at AmericanExpose.com, American spelled with a K, not a C, he's put the link to Stop CAFTA. I believe it's .com, StopCAFTA.com. I know there's a number of those kind of websites, Stop the FTAA. It might be .org. So you can, anyway, go to AmericanExpose.com, American spelled with a K, not a C, and you can link across to Stop CAFTA. And I'm going to share some information with you tonight because I think it's important for all of us to learn. Their intent is to implement this thing, to possibly have a vote on this thing as early as this month. So any efforts to counter the plan must be done quickly, folks. And at this point in time, the only thing I can see that we could possibly do, of course, certainly we can call our congressmen, but a lot of people call their congressmen during the whole implementation of the vote on NAFTA, and the little boogers did it anyway. So what Roger Mundy recommends is to call your state legislators, and your state legislators can then go to Washington and represent us. And he says that that's the best way to get things done. I think that makes a lot of sense because you can get a lot more done on a state level than you can dealing directly with congressmen. When you have a bunch of state legislators going to Washington, you better believe, and they're saying that their constituents are saying something very loud and clear. I mean, I think the weight of that happening, they have a lot of pull. And so, at any rate, we need to do something to counter this, and I'm all for solutions. And that certainly sounds like a viable solution. But CAFTA, we're going to share some information about it tonight. William Norman Grigg, he writes an article entitled CAFTA, Exporting American Jobs and Industry. It says, CAFTA, a forerunner of the European Union of the Americas, trades away American jobs in the name of rewarding Latin American democracies. Now, folks, one thing you have to understand, George W. Bush, our illustrious president, had a press conference, I believe it was last week sometime, and during this press conference, he was asked a question about the economy, and this was his reply.
I am concerned about the economy because our small business owners and families are paying higher prices at the gas pump. And that affects the lives of a lot of people. If you're a small business owner and you have to pay higher gas prices, and likely you may not hire a new worker. Of course, higher gas prices, as I have said, is like a tax on the small business job creators. And it's a tax on families. And I do think this has affected consumer sentiment. I do think it's affected the economy. On the other hand, the experts tell me that the forecast of economic growth in the coming months looks good. There's more to do to make sure that we don't slip back into slow growth or negative growth. One is to make sure taxes stay low. Secondly is to continue to pursue legal reform. I hope we can get an asbestos reform bill out of both the House and the Senate. There's some positive noises on Capitol Hill as to whether or not we can get an asbestos reform bill. That will be an important reform in order to make sure that our economy continues to grow.
Now listen to this.
We need to continue to open up markets for U.S. products. As you know, there'll be a vote for the Central American Free Trade Agreement here, hopefully soon. I'm a strong believer that that's in the interest of American job creators and workers, that we open up those markets. I know it's important geopolitically to say to those Central American countries, you've got a friend in America. We said we'd have an agreement with you, and it's important to ratify it. It'll help strengthen the neighborhood.
Yeah, I would like to know what kind of neighbor what kind of neighborhood is he talking about? And who are these experts that saying the economy is going to be so much better? Are they the experts at the Council on Foreign Relations, the CFR? Folks, they're promising a lot of things, just like they did for NAFTA. They're telling Americans that this thing is going to be so good for America, so good. But what they're talking about is the global economy. They're talking about the globalism and implementing the UN system on a worldwide basis. I mean, it will bring some developing countries up a little bit, but the cost involved. Ladies and gentlemen, there's nothing in it for you. That's the bottom line. There's absolutely nothing in the Central American Free Trade Agreement for you. And this is an implementation of Agenda 21, Chapter 3, Combating Poverty. I want to share with you this article from Norman Grigg. He says, Alan Johnson, Chief Agricultural Negotiation of the Office of U.S. Trade Representative, was enjoying his vacation in late February when he received a panicky call from the White House. The mid-year meeting of the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture, the NASDA, was on the verge of delivering a stinging rebuke to the Bush administration by passing a resolution opposing the proposed Central American Free Trade Agreement. CAFTA, as it's called, would build on the three-nation North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, by expanding the trade bloc to include Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, Nicaragua, Costa Rica, and the Dominican Republic. Congressional ratification of CAFTA is coveted by the White House, its political allies in Central America, and politically connected corporate interests, and there you have it, who stand to profit from outsourcing production to low-wage nations in the region. See, the bottom line is when he says it's going to help American businesses, it's going to help American businesses in the sense that they can get cheap labor. You see? But it's not going to help you and me. He continues. He says, it is stoutly opposed by U.S. agricultural and textile producers who are reeling from the economic impact of NAFTA and are understandably worried that CAFTA would trigger another flood of imports and another hemorrhage of industrial jobs. Most importantly, since the agreement would further undermine our nation's ability to control its economic destiny, it has prompted opposition from Americans who seek to preserve our national independence. As the February 26 AP report noted, quote, CAFTA is the most significant multilateral pact for the United States since the North American Free Trade Agreement with Mexico and Canada more than a decade ago. It is seen as crucial to the greater goal of establishing a free trade zone for all of the Western Hemisphere, unquote. Norman Grigg continues. He says, the supposed hemisphere free trade zone, the Free Trade Area of the Americas, or FTAA, would actually be an embryonic megastate modeled after the socialist European Union. The EU, it is important to remember, was initially sold to the European public as a free trade area as well. Having succeeded in moving several bilateral free trade agreements through Congress in its first term, the Bush administration faces its toughest test in seeking approval for CAFTA. According to CAFTA supporter Representative Kevin Brady, a Republican from Texas, passage of the agreement is difficult but doable. Congressional Quarterly reported that Republican congressional leaders in both houses are preparing to hold hearings on CAFTA. The hearings would be followed by a non-binding advisory markup in which House and Senate committees would draft the implementing legislation that the administration will send to Congress for an up or down vote. Under so-called fast-track rules, noted Congressional Quarterly on March 14th, a 90-day clock for congressional approval starts ticking when the administration officially sends the legislation to Congress. The Bush administration was painfully aware that winning congressional approval for CAFTA would require strangling the opposition before it found a public voice. Thus, Ellen Johnson was summoned back to Washington to address the meeting of state agricultural officials in an attempt to persuade them not to denounce CAFTA. By the time Ellen Johnson had been bundled into a Washington-bound jet to address NAFTA on February 21st, the group's Marketing and International Trade Committee had unanimously, with two abstentions, adopted a resolution opposing CAFTA. Although the he prostrated himself shamelessly before the group's General Assembly, Johnson was not successful in convincing the required two-thirds majority to overturn its Marketing and International Trade Committee's anti-CAFTA resolution. He was also unsuccessful in persuading the group to keep news of its disagreement with the White House out of the press. Fat chance, commented syndicated agricultural affairs analyst Alan Gubert. He said the vote sent shockwaves through the usually pro-trade NAFTA, whose members literally know the lay of the food and farmland in their home states. That's their job, he says, looking farmers and ranchers in the eye every day. On February 19th, almost half of them looked in the mirror and said, "My producers are right. CAFTA is wrong." Moments later, the White House fire bell rang. According to Delaware Agricultural Secretary Michael Skews, vice chairman of the NAFTA committee, the condemned CAFTA, quote, "were more concerned about how CAFTA affects farmers than how it affects trade," unquote. Chief among the objections offered by NAFTA and many other CAFTA critics is the fact that the supposed free trade agreement would impose what amounts to unilateral trade disarmament on U.S. agricultural producers. The six foreign nations included in the pact would be granted immediate access to U.S. food markets. However, U.S. producers would have to wait for years or even decades in order to be granted reciprocal access. If, as expected, the FTAA follows the CAFTA model by opening U.S. domestic markets first, with access to foreign markets coming only years later, the results for U.S. farmers would be nothing less than devastating. During the prescribed interval, Gubert observes, quote, "nations like Brazil, Russia, and India will become food exporting powerhouses to both the U.S. and the world, while American farmers become calendar watchers," unquote. And see, but the bottom line here, folks, is this would put America more dependent upon foreign food. And what did Catherine Bertini say? But food is power. We use it to control populations. Some may call it bribery. We do not apologize. Catherine Bertini with the World Food Program of the UN. If the point of CAFTA is to promote free exchange of goods and services between producers and consumers, why is the pact designed to offer artificial competitive advantages to foreign food producers? Rather than promoting what could honestly be called free trade, CAFTA amounts to a foreign aid program using non-reciprocal access to U.S. markets as a roundabout subsidy for agricultural programs in foreign nations. Folks, it's just more of this redistribution of the wealth program that's a part of Agenda 21. He continues, he says, and this is hardly the only way in which CAFTA amounts to a foreign aid scheme disguised as a free trade initiative. The Bush administration and its pro-CAFTA allies habitually refer to the pact as a means of promoting economic development and building democratic institutions in Central America. This refrain was featured prominently in a hastily assembled nationwide tour of ambassadors from the CAFTA nations. Quote, "ambassadors and officials from Central America made a passionate plea in Seattle for U.S. passage of a regional trade deal they see as a vital tool to help lift their countries out of poverty," unquote, reported the February 21st Seattle Times. They continued by saying, while acknowledging that CAFTA isn't perfect, the official said it is a vital tool for development and forms part of a package of government and market changes that would promote stability and democracy and energize the economies of the Central American nations, unquote. Roxanne Premet of the Citizens Committee to Stop the FTAA, an ad hoc project of the John Birch Society, of which this article was originally published, attended a session of the CAFTA Roadshow in Raleigh-Durham, North Carolina, where participants preached exactly the same message. Premet told the New American magazine, quote, they definitely offered the argument that CAFTA was vital as a way of promoting economic development in Central America. Several of the speakers emphasized the idea that we should use CAFTA as a form of foreign aid, rewarding these emerging democracies in the region. And folks, whenever we deal with this, we have to point out, too, that democracy is socialism. It's not your American form of government. We've covered that in the past. We'll cover it in the future, I'm sure. But it has to be pointed out. William Gregg continues. He says, it's important to recognize that economic growth is a result of production, not consumption. Thus, the logic of the trade as foreign aid argument dictates that CAFTA is intended to promote the importation of goods from Central America rather than to export the export of U.S. goods to the region. Now, you just heard, I just played you a clip a moment ago, ladies and gentlemen, of George W. Bush. I believe it was April 28th that he had his press conference. And he said, we need to open up markets in Central America. Let me give you an idea of what kind of markets we're talking about here. Because he's promoting this as a means by which the American people will prosper, right? This is what he would have you to believe. Okay, from the CIA's website, they have a, on the CIA's website, they have a World Factbook, which they cover various countries around the world. I think there's a section for each country. This is what the CIA says, and certainly you would think an intelligence agency would have the intelligence on a certain country's economy, right? Now, CAFTA would be extended to, number one, countries like Guatemala. Here's what they say about Guatemala. They say Guatemala is the largest and most prosperous of the Central American countries, with a gross domestic product per capita roughly one-half that of Brazil, Argentina, and Chile. The agricultural sector accounts for about one-fourth of GDP, two-thirds of exports, and half of the labor force. Coffee, sugar, and bananas are the main products. The 1996 signing of the Peace Accords, which ended 36 years of civil war, removed a major obstacle to foreign investment, but widespread political violence and corruption scandals continue to dampen investor confidence. The distribution of income remains highly unequal, with perhaps, now listen to this, folks, the distribution of income remains highly unequal, with perhaps 75% of the population below the poverty line. Now, when George W. Bush talks about opening up the markets, where's the market going to be, folks? Who is this designed to help? When you got 75% of the population of Guatemala living in poverty, are these people going to be buying our goods? That's the question that you have to ask. Who's going to be lifted out of poverty? Well, Guatemala will be helped by this. But the bottom line is, what cost? Look, I'm not opposed to necessarily fighting poverty. I don't want the people of the world to live in poverty. But the bottom line is, how are they going to lift these people out of poverty? They're going to spend us broke. Your standard of living will go down as these developing countries, as they're called by the UN, will be lifted up. And that's the plan, that's the design, that's the agenda of the 21st century laid out by the United Nations. 75% of Guatemala lives below the poverty line. Honduras is another country that will be involved in the Central American Free Trade Agreement. Here's what the CIA says about Honduras. They say Honduras is one of the poorest countries in the Western Hemisphere. with an extraordinarily unequal distribution of income and massive unemployment. And it's banking on expanded trade under the U.S. Central America Free Trade Agreement, CAFTA, and on debt relief under the Heavily Indebted Poor Countries Initiative. More socialism, folks. More taking money away from you to give to these developing countries. Again, I don't want anybody to live in poverty, but what is going to be the price of lifting these developing countries out of poverty, folks? It's putting you into poverty. It's bad policy. It's the lack of individual freedom that causes countries, in a large part, to be indebted and to be in poverty to begin with. It's bad government, for the most part. There are certain environmental factors, there's certain climatological situations, certain natural occurrences that happen, the ones that aren't orchestrated by the global elite. So there are certain other things, but for the most part, it's bad government. And here we have our government and our leaders, quote-unquote, trying to forge partnerships with impoverished countries, and they're trying to sell it to you by telling you that it's going to help the American economy. It's going to strengthen the neighborhood. What neighborhood is he talking about? He's talking about the global economy. He's talking about our global neighborhood. Okay, continuing on here with Norman Griggs' information. He says it's important to recognize that economic growth is the result of production, not consumption. Thus, the logic of the trade as foreign aid argument dictates that CAFTA is intended to promote the importation of goods from Central America rather than the export of U.S. goods to the region. Pro-CAFTA Congressman Jeff Flake, who really is a flake if he's supporting CAFTA, he describes the region as a, quote, a potentially significant trading bloc with the United States, unquote. However, the aggregate economy of the six CAFTA nations is minuscule, as I was just demonstrating. They said, quote, add up the six CAFTA economies and you get the market size of New Haven, Connecticut, points out trade analyst Alan Tunnelson of the U.S. Business and Industry Council. Assistant U.S. Trade Representative Christopher Padillo insists that while the CAFTA nations are small, they are actually very big markets for our products. Uh-huh. In fact, we trade more with Central America than we trade with Brazil or Australia, he said. William Griggs says, if that claim were true, it would make CAFTA redundant, assuming once again that the promotion of free trade is the desired result. However, as Tunnelson writes, quote, U.S. exports to the CAFTA nations are dominated by what might be called turnaround exports, that is to say, exports that are not final products which are actually consumed abroad, but parts and components of final products that are assembled for further processed abroad, and then shipped right back for consumption in the United States. As a result, they don't service net new demand for in foreign markets, which eventually would require domestic employers to expand production, hire new workers, and boost wages. They service the same old demand in the same old market, America's, unquote. Put in the simplest terms, the CAFTA nations are an economically stagnant population of 46 million people, more than half of whom live below the poverty level, as defined by their standard of living, not ours. Costa Rica, the wealthiest CAFTA nation, has a per capita gross domestic product of $9,000, roughly one quarter of ours. Every nation other than Costa Rica displays net emigration, meaning that their citizens are leaving home in search of economic opportunity. Is this the raw material of a potentially lucrative U.S. export market or a low-wage population that will act as a magnet for further outsourcing of our embattled manufacturing sector? Tunnelson concludes that CAFTA is a classic outsourcing agreement, an arrangement in which the only significant U.S. export would be manufacturing jobs to poor, low-wage nations. According to CAFTA supporters, this is precisely why it's important to ratify the accord. what pretzel logic. Representative Kevin Brady of Texas insists that CAFTA is a proper reward to Central American nations that, quote, have emerged from years of war and dictatorial rule to make major steps toward promoting democracy and human rights. That according to the Associated Press. He continued, he said, kicking them down the ladder would be a major mistake. Actually, that was Jeff Flake that said that kicking them down the ladder would be a major mistake. Representative Jeff Flake makes a similar point, stating that his primary reason for supporting CAFTA is a belief that this agreement would spur U.S. investment and promote economic development in the region. Of course, Representatives Brady and Flake, like scores of other congressmen who expressed support for CAFTA, were elected to represent the interests of U.S. citizens, not the interests of Costa Rica, El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, or the Dominican Republic. Nor is promoting economic development in foreign lands at the expense of American prosperity among Congress's constitutional responsibilities, a fact that voters should impress on the minds of their representatives before CAFTA is brought to a vote. Moreover, even if the purpose were to help poor peoples in foreign lands improve their standards of living, the long-term solution can only be found in political and economic freedom, not in pulling the U.S. down. Approval of CAFTA, would offer at best negligible economic benefits to the U.S. and very likely inflict severe damage to our already suffering industrial sector. This much is obvious to anyone who invests a minimal amount of time to examine the mathematics of the proposition. You know, and one thing I'll inject here, folks, it's amazing. It's just amazing how little people know about this. The president, as I just played, he mentioned it in his speech. But I have not heard, and maybe it's just me, I don't know, has anybody else out there heard anything about the Central American Free Trade Agreement about to be voted on, except on broadcasts like this? I don't know of any major press coverage at all that this is getting. I really don't. If it weren't for the internet, I mean, I might not even know about it. We got to take a break, ladies and gentlemen. We have a lot more on the other side of the break. I hope you'll stay with us. You're listening to American Exposé. I'm Darren Weeks. More coverage of the Central American Free Trade Agreement on the other side. Stay with us.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
This program on FirstAmendmentRadio.com is much more than entertainment. It is more like an information-packed audio magazine delivered direct to you. Like any magazine, if you don't want to keep getting it, simply unsubscribe by not listening. But you are listening, so now go to FirstAmendmentRadio.com on the Internet and follow the instructions there to make a donation or subscribe to your favorite program. Not only should you subscribe for yourself, but you should give extra to help us spread the message of FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Don't do Internet? You can also write us. First Amendment Radio, 139 East Tulare Avenue, that's T-U-L-A-R-E Avenue, in Tulare, California, 93274. 139 East Tulare Avenue, that's T-U-L-A-R-E Avenue, in Tulare, California, T-U-L-A-R-E, California, 93274. Thank you.
Dial 911 and Die, the book police chiefs and politicians don't want you to read, shows there is no legal obligation for the police to protect you. Just ask yourself, if the police aren't obligated to protect my family and I'm disarmed by legislation, what if...
A burglar!
Dial 911 and Die is available from Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership. Order it online at jpfo.org.
Be sure to listen to The Church at Kaweah every Saturday and Sunday at 7 a.m. and 11 p.m. Pacific Time. The Church at Kaweah is a Lordship Church under the sole authority of Jesus Christ. You may contact The Church at Kaweah by calling 559-561-4860. That's 559-561-4860. And let them know how much you're being blessed. Thank you.
Need to continue to open up markets for U.S. products. As you know, there'll be a vote for the Central American Free Trade Agreement here, hopefully soon. I'm a strong believer that that's in the interest of American job creators and workers, that we open up those markets. I know it's important geopolitically to say to those Central American countries, you've got a friend in America. We said we'd have an agreement with you, and it's important to ratify it. It'll help strengthen the neighborhood.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. American Exposé. I'm Darren Weeks, and we're talking about the Central American Free Trade Agreement tonight. And I'm sharing with you some information written by Norman Grigg, William Grigg, on CAFTA. As Congress is expected to possibly vote on this trade agreement with the Central American countries as early as this month. And we're talking about what it would do to the already devastated NAFTA, devastated U.S. economy. He continues, he says, approval of CAFTA would offer at best negligible economic benefits to the U.S. and very likely inflict severe damage to our already suffering industrial sector. This much is obvious to anyone who invests a minimal amount of time to examine the mathematics of the proposition. Knowing that the positive case for CAFTA is non-existent, the Bush administration and its allies have chosen to accentuate the negative by playing the China card. Reports CNN correspondent Christine Romans, quote, in Washington, CAFTA supporters call a vote against CAFTA a vote for China, unquote. Ladies and gentlemen, China is another created crisis. They created the China mess to begin with. Through our involvement in what was the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade and then the World Trade Organization, we became involved in all of this mess, and this is a classic situation of the Hegelian dialectic. Now they're saying we have to do something about China, so what are we going to do? We're going to solve the problem with another trade agreement, which is going to plunge this country further and further into the ground, which ultimately is the goal. America must go down in order to get this new world order established that they want to get implemented. He continues, he says, in January, the World Trade Organization lifted the worldwide system of nation-based textile import quotas. This resulted in an immediate surge in textile exports from China and the beginning of what the August 5, 2004 Christian Science Monitor predicted would be a massive transfer of jobs and wealth in the developing world over the next few years. Unquote. The Chinese textile tsunami stands to wipe out what remains of the U.S. textile industry, as well as thousands of low-wage jobs in the six CAFTA nations. Assistant U.S. Trade Representative Christopher Padilla, the Bush administration's point man for CAFTA, insists that only by uniting together through CAFTA will the textile makers in the Southeast states and apparel makers in Central America be able to face the oncoming competition from China. A vote against CAFTA is a vote against U.S. textiles and a vote for China. There really is no choice, former U.S. Representative Cass Ballinger told textile manufacturers during a CAFTA tour stop in Raleigh, North Carolina. Citing the WTO's action in lifting Chinese textile import quotas, he emphasized, a vote against CAFTA is a vote for China. This refrain was immediately taken up by other participants in the nationwide pro-CAFTA tour. A vote against CAFTA is a vote in favor of China, recited El Salvador's Ambassador Rene Rodriguez. A vote against CAFTA is a vote for China, echoed Costa Rican Ambassador Thomas Duenas. The bottom line, says Mark Smith, Managing Director of Western Hemisphere Affairs for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which favors the agreement, the bottom line is the Chinese are eating our lunch. He says they will do it with or without CAFTA. The question remains how much lunch there will be left for them to eat. Unbelievable. According to Keith Crisco, CEO at Asheboro Elastics of North Carolina, the alternative to enactment of CAFTA would be Asia wiping that place off the map. For this reason, can you guess what comes next? A vote against CAFTA is a vote for China. Representative Virginia Fox, a Republican from North Carolina, whose district is heavily dependent on the textile industry, finds that CAFTA-China refrain both tiresome and unconvincing. He says, quote, I've heard that plenty of times, and I'm certainly not convinced. Our Representative Fox told the New American, quote, while I certainly don't want to lose our markets in China, the fact is that it was NAFTA that practically wiped us out, and CAFTA would do even more damage than NAFTA did, unquote. She continued. She says, most of the people in my district are very opposed to CAFTA for economic reasons, although there are some textile industry people who certainly think it represents the best of several bad opinions. But she opposes the pact not only because of the damage it will do to our economy, but also because of the threat it represents to our imperiled national independence. She says, I have concerns about our involvement of any kind of international arrangement of this sort that undermines our sovereignty, whether it's NAFTA, CAFTA, the WTO, or certainly the United Nations, she explained. Once the role that CAFTA would play in WTO-administered global economic regime is recognized, the breathtaking cynicism of the Bush administration's pro-CAFTA China card becomes apparent. During a special lame duck session in 1994, Congress ratified U.S. membership in the WTO. This resulted in what GOP congressional leader, then incoming House Speaker Newt Gingrich, described as a very big transfer of power from Congress to the global trade body. In committee testimony, Gingrich, who supported the WTO, told his colleagues, quote, we need to be honest about the fact that we are transferring from the United States at a practical level significant authority to a new organization. This is a transformational moment, unquote. The scope of the transformation was described in Our Global Neighborhood, the 1995 report of the United Nations Aligned Commission on Global Governance. The WTO explained that the August body is, quote, a crucial building block for global economic governance. The WTO and advanced regional groups such as the European Union will increasingly be faced with the issue that will dominate the international agenda in years to come. How to create rules for deep integration that go way beyond what has traditionally been thought of as trade, unquote. The regional groups referred to above include NAFTA as well as CAFTA and the FTAA, if and when the latter comes into being. And you better bet, folks, they're going to do everything they can to make it come into being. They would be regional affiliates of a WTO-managed global economy in which our government would be required to implement economic policies established by unaccountable socialist bureaucrats in Geneva. Essentially, the same people who promoted the WTO are now telling us that we have no choice but to encourage Congress to approve CAFTA, which would be a regional affiliate of the same WTO. The Bush administration is clearly frantic about CAFTA's prospects in Congress, witness Alan Johnson's hasty deployment to try to stop NASDA's, that agricultural organization, their anti-CAFTA resolution. Another illustration is found in the nomination of former Ohio Republican Congressman Rob Portman to serve as U.S. Trade Representative. A Capitol Hill source told the New American magazine that Portman was chosen, quote, specifically because the Bush administration believes that Portman's connections in Congress will help push CAFTA through, unquote. This view is shared by Jamal Abu Rashid, chairman of the Economics Department at Xavier University, told the Cincinnati Post, quote, that the push to enact the Central American Free Trade Agreement needed a congressional insider to get legislators who have become wary of job losses from sweeping trade treaties behind the pact. Congress has been less enthusiastic about trade lately because of the job impacts. Bush wants somebody to resist Congress's efforts to resist trade pacts, unquote. Congress displays remarkable composure about the loss of American jobs and the steady surrender of our sovereignty to regional bodies. However, congressmen take immediate alarm when their own jobs are threatened. Americans must make it clear to their congressional representatives that if they vote for CAFTA, they will be given the chance to explore new career opportunities in the private sector they are doing so much to destroy. And folks, that of course assumes that we have honest elections in this country. And I don't know that we can assume such an well, that's quite going out on a limb, I think. But at any rate, we still have to make our voices be heard. The number of Congress, by the way, is 202-224-3121. 202-224-3121. And I'll give that number again out. Phil, I strongly urge you to call your representatives, your congressmen, and do what you can. But also make sure you inform your state legislators as to this information as well, folks. Send them emails, fax them this, and I'll put these links up on the website, AmericanExpose.com, tonight after the broadcast, so that you can print this stuff out, fax it over, or mail it to your state legislators and say they've done it to us before, they're doing it to us again. You need to go and instruct, represent us before Congress. That's the only way that I can see that we're going to be able to get something major done, folks. Because when state legislators start making noise, when they start saying that their constituents are upset about something, it's going to have a lot of weight, at least a lot more than if private citizens, just a few private citizens, call in, although I would not discourage you from calling. But as I said before, with NAFTA, there were a lot of calls going in there, and the little boogers did it anyway. The keystone to convergence, he says, a keystone is a crucial piece holding together two sections of an elaborate structure. If it is removed, the structure will collapse. And by the way, I just want to say this one other thing. If you want to get to your state legislation website, you can go to sweetliberty.org, and on the main page there's an area that says locate your state government, and you can get to it from there, and then go in and find out how to contact your state legislators. He says, if it's not put in place, the structure cannot be built. CAFTA plays the precise role in the planned hemispheric merger through the free trade area of the Americas. Through NAFTA, the United States, Mexico, and Canada are being rapidly merged into a single economic and political bloc. On March 14th, shortly before President Bush met with Mexican leader Vicente Fox and Canadian Prime Minister Paul Martin at a tri-national summit in Texas, the Council on Foreign Relations released a report calling for the creation of a North American Economic and Security Community by 2010. The key points of that report were reiterated in a March 28th New York Times op-ed by Rafael Fernandez de Castro and Rosana Fuentes Berrain, editor and managing editor of Foreign Affairs in Español, a Spanish language publication of the CFR. Invoking Jean Monnet, founder of the European Union, the Mexican authors declared, quote, we must move beyond the managing trade and into constructing a new relationship intended to bring the North American community closer to reality. unquote. Kind of gives you insight into what George Bush says when he says talks about strengthening the neighborhood. What neighborhood? The global neighborhood. Referring to the recent tri-national summit, the authors predicted, quote, maybe, just maybe, the men gathered at the Crawford Ranch could someday be seen as the Jean Monnets of their age, the founding fathers of the North American community, unquote. But the vision behind the Crawford Summit encompasses the entire hemisphere. Speaking on March 23rd, President Bush explained, quote, in order to make sure that the free trade agreement of the Americas has a chance to succeed, it is important to show the sovereign nations in South America that trade has worked amongst the three of us, unquote. He also pointedly referred to CAFTA as an important part of this process of hemispheric merger, demanding that Congress make sure that they approve CAFTA this year. But if the CAFTA keystone isn't put in place, the grand vision of a European Union-style megastate will lose its forward momentum. This is why CAFTA must be defeated. Taken together, the six CAFTA nations have a minuscule consumer economy, but represent a huge pool of low-wage labor. And see, that's what it's all about, folks. Thus, the only export encouraged by CAFTA would be U.S. manufacturing jobs. And this is something, too, by the way, that the average American doesn't know that this is going on. And when you tell them this, when you tell them that they're doing it again, they're extending NAFTA. They're talking about a Central American Free Trade Agreement. They immediately know what that means, folks. At least the ones that I've talked to. And a lot of these people are completely clueless when it comes to what's going on. They're not listeners of Patriot news on networks like this one. But yet they understand that another trade agreement is going to be devastating to America. CAFTA is a critical stepping stone toward creation of a 34-nation free trade area of the Americas. The FTAA, an embryonic regional government modeled after the socialistic European Union. Under CAFTA, barriers to agricultural imports from our trading partners would be removed immediately, while barriers to U.S. exports wouldn't be lifted for anywhere from 10 to 20 years, thereby crippling U.S. agricultural producers. And this precedent would almost certainly be followed in the FTAA. Promoters of CAFTA clearly perceive the PAC to be a form of foreign aid to emerging democracies in Central America, tacitly recognizing that it wouldn't result in genuine free trade, but rather a huge transfer of wealth from the U.S. to the region. You're urged to go to stopcafta.com. It is a .com. www.stopcafta.com. And read up more on this. And Dennis has posted this link on AmericanExpose.com. American spelled with a K, not a C. Folks, as I said earlier, if you're just joining us, CAFTA there's nothing in it for the United States, folks. 75% of Guatemala, one of the countries that's going to be in this partnership with the U.S., 75% of the population of Guatemala is below the poverty line. Honduras is one of the poorest countries in the Western Hemisphere, with an extraordinarily unequal distribution of income and massive unemployment, and they're banking on CAFTA to rescue them, as well as debt relief from the Heavily Indebted Poor Countries Initiative, another socialistic initiative. El Salvador, 36.1% of the population, according to the CIA's World Factbook, 36.1% of the population is below the poverty line. Nicaragua is one of the hemisphere's poorest countries. According to the CIA, they face their low per capita income, massive unemployment, and huge external debt. What would CAFTA do for them? Well, certainly the massive unemployment would be eased, wouldn't it? distribution of income is one of the most unequal on the globe. While the country has made progress toward macroeconomic stability over the past years, GDP, that is gross domestic product, annual growth has been far too low to meet the country's needs. As a result of successful performance under its International Monetary Fund Policy Program and other efforts, Nicaragua qualified in early 2004 for some $4 billion in foreign debt reduction under the Heavily Indebted Poor Countries HIPC initiative. Even after this reduction, however, the government continues to bear a significant foreign and domestic debt burden. If ratified, the U.S. Central American Free Trade Agreement, CAFTA, will provide an opportunity, the CIA says, for Nicaragua to attract investment, create jobs, and deepen economic development, while President Bolanos enjoys the support of the international financial bodies, his internal political base is meager. Who is CAFTA designed to help? When you have Nicaragua, where half the population, ladies and gentlemen, 50%, in 2001, were below the poverty line. Costa Rica's basically stable economy depends on tourism, agriculture, and electronics exports. Poverty has been substantially reduced over the past 15 years, and a strong social safety net has been put into place. It's called socialism, folks. Foreign investors remain attracted by the country's political stability and high education levels. And tourism continues to bring in foreign exchange. Low prices for coffee and bananas have hurt the agricultural sector. The government continues to grapple with its large deficit and massive internal debt. The reduction of inflation remains a difficult problem because of rises in the price of imports, labor market rigidities, and fiscal deficits. The country also needs to reform its tax system and its pattern of public expenditure. Costa Rica recently concluded negotiations to participate in the U.S. Central American Free Trade Agreement, which, if ratified by the Costa Rican legislature, and why wouldn't they, folks, it would result in economic reforms and an improved investment climate. Costa Rica. Should I continue? We have the Dominican Republic. I'm sorry, the Dominican Republic. 25% of their population is below the poverty line. They're a little better off than the others. But the point of the matter here is, folks, these countries that we're getting ready to enter into this agreement with, they're largely impoverished, so-called developing countries. They're undeveloped, underdeveloped, and they're largely impoverished. Where is the market for U.S. goods? Where is the market? How are these people who are living in poverty going to be able to buy anything from us? How is this going to help you and I? How will this help America? We're being sold a bill of goods by our traitorous leaders. The market will be opened up as a market for business, including American business, but business to get low-wage jobs. And that's what it's all about. Ladies and gentlemen, this plan is so clear. It's crystal clear what they're doing to us. And yet the American public continue to sleep on. The American people are largely ignorant. I'm no genius here to be able to look up this information. All you have to do is put the name of these countries in a search engine. But I'm reading to you information directly from the CIA's website, cia.gov, about how these countries fare financially. And yet this trade agreement goes forward, and George Bush knows good and well what he's doing. We have the phony neocons on the radio praising him like he's some great American, because they're controlled as well. William Jasper writes about the FTAA. He says, on February 20th, President Bush officially notified Congress that he intends to sign the recently negotiated Central American Free Trade Agreement, CAFTA. That letter of notification started the clock ticking on the president's so-called fast-track trade negotiating authority, which Congress reauthorized in 2002. Under the fast-track rules, the president must give Congress a 90-day notice before signing any trade agreement. That means President Bush could sign CAFTA as early as late May, although he could decide to sign at a later date. Once the president signs the agreement and then formally sends it to Congress, the legislators are bound by fast-track rules to vote on implementing legislation within 90 legislative days. Okay. So apparently it's signing that will take place this month. He continues, he says, they may not amend the pact, so that's good. That means we have a little time. Because if he signs it, there's 90 days. 90 legislative days. They may not amend the pact, as with NAFTA and other free trade agreements, the FTAs. Only an up or down vote is permitted. The Bush administration has repeatedly stated that creation of a free trade area of the Americas, FTAA, encompassing all of North and South America, is one of its top priorities, and CAFTA is viewed as an important stepping stone to that ultimate goal. In its January 16, 2002 press release announcing the official opening of CAFTA negotiations, the Bush White House stated, quote, this negotiation will complement the United States' goal of completing the Free Trade Area of the Americas, FTAA, no later than January 2005 by increasing the momentum in the hemisphere toward lowering barriers, unquote. The big question is this. Will the administration and its trade allies, Wall Street's corporate insiders and one world elites, be able to build enough momentum and marshal sufficient political capital to push this project through Congress in an election year in which jobs, outsourcing trade deficits, record trade deficits, and record budget deficits have become key issues? Well, obviously, it's not the... Anyway, folks, we got to go. We got to go. We're out of time. We got to take a stand. We got to let these boogers know exactly how we feel about this. So call Congress, 202-224-3121, 202-224-3121, and call your state legislators and educate them and to do what they can to stop this while we still have a country. God bless. Good night.
Most Americans want our government to control our borders, especially since 9/11. But amazingly, some political leaders want to do away with borders entirely, whether the American people agree or not. And they have a serious plan for accomplishing their aims while deceiving the public. It's called the Free Trade Area of the Americas, or FTAA, a huge power grab.